Good morning, everyone, and welcome to Coca-Cola FEMSA's second quarter 2016 conference call. As a reminder, today's conference is being recorded, and all participants are in a listen-only mode. At the request of the company, we will open the conference up for questions and answers after the presentation. During this conference call, management may discuss certain forward-looking statements concerning Coca-Cola FEMSA's future performance and should be considered as good faith estimates made by the company. These forward-looking statements reflect management's expectations and are based upon currently available data. Actual results are subjective to future events and uncertainties, which can materially impact the company's actual performance. At this time, I will now turn the conference over to Mr. Hector Trevino, Coca-Cola FEMSA's Chief Financial Officer. Please go ahead, Mr. Trevino.
Good morning, everyone, and thank you for joining us to discuss our second quarter 2016 results. As transactions continue to outpace volume growth, we maintain market share gains across key markets such as Mexico, Brazil, and Argentina. We leverage our operating focus, our price flexibility, and our financial discipline to weather a generally volatile currency environment and soft consumer dynamics in our South American territories. And we ultimately deliver another set of solid, comparable top and bottom line results. For the quarter, our consolidated comparable revenues rose 9%, and our comparable operating income grew 12%, while we increased our comparable EBITDA by close to 13%. These results, fueled by more than 5% growth in transactions on a comparable basis, reaching close to 5 billion interactions with our consumers for the quarter. More than 70% of our incremental transactions came from our robust sparkling beverage portfolio, while the balance came from both water and non-carbonated beverages. In the process, we continue to improve our point-of-sale execution and product coverage and to bolster our packaging and brand innovation in order to present our consumers with a growing array of choices across our multi-category portfolio. Each of our operations delivered a solid set of comparable results. In Mexico, a positive consumer environment helped our volumes to grow more than 7%, while our transactions increased more than 9% and our average price per case improved 5%. Consequently, we delivered 13% revenue growth for the quarter. We grew our volumes across every category. Our sparkling beverage volume increased by more than 6%, supported by more than 4% growth of brand Coca-Cola, a 13% increase in Coca-Cola Zero, continued improvement in the performance of Citral Mundet, together with the recently launched sparkling orange and lemonade, naranja anada, and limon anada. Our personal water volume grew more than 20%, driven by Ciel and Ciel Extreme flavored water, and our jug water volume increased 4%. Moreover, our non-carbonated beverage volume grew 19%, driven by more than 20% growth in Valle Fruit Orange and the Del Valle juice portfolio, along with Santa Clara, which more than doubled its volume to almost 6 million liters. In addition, we continue to expand Powerade's leading position in the sports drink segment across our territory. Mexico's solid top-line performance, combined with our operating discipline and our currency hedging strategy, enabled our operations to maintain almost flat EBITDA margins in the face of currency volatility and higher local sugar prices. In Central America, we grew our volumes by more than 7%. By country, Nicaragua and Costa Rica grew more than 11% each, while Guatemala resumed growth at a 7% pace and Panama experienced a slight decline. transaction growth that outpaced volumes, coupled with our local pricing initiatives and operating discipline, enabled us to expand both growth and operating income margins in the region. Once again, our Brazilian operations delivered solid results in the face of continued currency volatility, a tough consumer environment, increasingly affected by high inflation and unemployment rates, and very difficult weather conditions in June. Although our volumes declined in the mid-single digits, we continued to gain market share in every category, and transactions grew slightly, outperforming volumes by 5 percentage points. We remain focused on enhancing our execution indices across all channel formats, while we have achieved improvements in every aspect. We continue to see greater opportunities to improve point-of-sale activation and price compliance indicators. Key highlights of our sparkling beverage portfolio performance include the continued strength of our returnable presentations, which grew 4% for the quarter, and the performance of Quasi, which once again grew significantly, driving the growth of our flavor sparkling beverage volumes during the quarter. Our increased focus on improving point-of-sale coverage of still beverage continues to drive the growth of this category. Team continues to deliver double-digit volume growth driven by Leao Fuse Tea. White water grew 5% for the quarter. More importantly, our local pricing and revenue management initiatives, our currency hedging strategy, and our focus on cost control enable our Brazilian operations to expand EBITDA margins by 150 basis points during this quarter. In Colombia, our volume declined 4% in the face of a decelerating consumer environment, affected by macroeconomic slowdown, higher inflation rates, the devaluation of the currency, cooler temperatures, and an aggressive competitive environment. Despite this slowdown, our transactions once again outperformed volumes, growing almost 3%. Volumes of brand Coca-Cola declined slightly, while Fuse Tea and Brisa Personal Water continued their significant growth. Our pricing initiatives, implemented to compensate for increased inflation rates, the devaluation of the Colombian peso, and higher local sugar prices, coupled with our operating discipline and our hedging strategy, enable us to mitigate margin pressures at the EBITDA level. In Argentina, consumers continue to face constrained disposable income as revised salaries lag the latest spike of inflation and the government continue to remove subsidies. For the quarter, our volume declined 12%. And transactions outperformed this contraction by a couple of percentage points. Despite this performance, our robust portfolio offering, innovation, and our infrastructure investments continue to yield positive market share gains across every category. Furthermore, our currency hedging strategy and our operating and financial discipline continue to deliver solid improvement in our EBITDA margin, which expanded by 410 basis points for the quarter. In Venezuela, a tough operating and economic environment, we were forced to temporarily stop production this quarter due to a shortage of sugar for industrial use. This led to volume declines of more than 40% for this quarter. As the supply of sugar resumes, we continue to underscore our commitment to our Venezuelan consumers by further reinforcing our sparkling beverage portfolio without calories. Our Philippines operation continued to deliver solid results, achieving volume and transaction growth of 10% and 11% respectively. This performance was driven by 18% volume growth of brand Coca-Cola, driven by a more competitive returnable glass portfolio and the continued success of our one-way PET strategy. Our core sparkling flavor volumes increased by 12%, mainly supported by our Mismo single-serve one-way presentations. More importantly, our business in the Philippines continued to deliver positive operational and financial results this quarter. We are particularly encouraged by this franchise evolution to sustain profitability. Moving on to our financial performance, as of June, our net debt to EBITDA ratio was 1.82 times, as compared with 1.56 times at the end of 2015. For the quarter, our comparable net income declined 13% to 1 peso and 6 Mexican cents per share. Net income was affected by a foreign exchange loss resulting from the devaluation of the Mexican peso as applied to our U.S. dollar denominated net debt position of $700 million. And higher interest expenses in Mexican pesos, mainly driven by the effect of the depreciation of the Mexican peso as applied to our interest payments denominated in U.S. dollars and Brazilian reais. This decline was partially offset by a lower tax rate resulting from certain tax efficiencies across our operations, a lower effective tax rate in Colombia as a consequence of moving part of our local production to our new plant in a tax-free zone, and ongoing efforts to reduce non-deductible items across our operations. Going forward, we expect these initiatives will continue to positively affect our consolidated tax rate. This quarter, we reach another important milestone in our relationship with our partner, the Coca-Cola Company. Coca-Cola FEMSA and the Coca-Cola Company reach a new broad cooperation framework. This cooperation framework seeks to maintain a mutually beneficial business relationship over the long term, which will allow both companies to focus on continuing to drive the business forward and to generate profitable growth. We have agreed that concentrate prices for sparkling beverages in Mexico will gradually increase over a three-year period beginning July of 2017. Based on our internal estimate for revenues and sales volume mix, we currently expect the incremental annual cost in Mexico on an annualized basis to be approximately $35 million for the years 2017, 18, and 19. Both companies are committed to implementing marketing and commercial strategies and productivity programs to maximize the profitability. At Coca-Cola FEMSA, we are confident that these initiatives will mitigate the effects of concentrate price adjustments. Potential future concentrate price adjustment for sparkling beverages and flavored water in Mexico will consider investment and profitability levels that are beneficial to the business of KOF and KO. The Coca-Cola Company recognizes Coca-Cola FEMSA's strong operating model and execution capabilities. With respect to the Coca-Cola Company's bottling investment group territories that it might divest in the future, we reach an understanding to assess on a preferred basis the acquisition of specific franchises in Latin America, the United States, and other regions. This agreement sets the stage for Coca-Cola FEMSA's next wave of inorganic growth allowing us to consolidate our position as a truly diversified, multicultural, multi-category global leader. For the first half of 2016, we delivered solid comparable results across our operations in the face of high currency volatility and a tough consumer environment through our South American markets. As we enter the second half of the year, we are certain that we have taken the necessary actions to bolster our top-line results by increasing our market share, growing transactions at a faster pace, and implementing appropriate price increases. More importantly, we have the operating and financial discipline to protect our profitability and cash flow generations. For the near to long term, we have strategically set the stage for continued organic and inorganic growth. We have also reinforced our commitment to invest in the growth of each of our markets. Over the past 2 years, we have enhanced our production capacity in Argentina, and we have invested more than $500 million to build new state-of-the-art, eco-friendly bottling plants in Colombia and Brazil to offer the flexibility for future expansion while yielding substantial gains in operating productivity and efficiency. We have further modernized and optimized our supply chain across our operations. More importantly, we have made these capital investments while maintaining our financial flexibility and increasing dividend payments to our shareholders. Through our centers of excellence, we are building a sustainable competitive advantage through capability development, focus on our commercial, distribution, and logistics, manufacturing, and IT areas. They provide significant opportunities to generate top-line growth, operating efficiencies, and savings, while driving innovation and fostering talent development across our organization. The transformation of our Philippines operation continues to take hold, and we are encouraged by its top and bottom line performance going forward, as we near the consolidation of its results beginning in 2017. Finally, the new cooperation framework with the Coca-Cola Company provides for long-term guidelines on the relationship's economics, allowing us to capture the next wave of growth and further territory diversification. Consolidating Coca-Cola FEMSA position as a truly global, multicultural, multi-category leader in the industry. As always, thank you for your continued trust and support. And operator, now I would like to open the call for questions.
Thank you. If you would like to ask a question, please signal by pressing star 1 on your telephone keypad. If you're using a speakerphone, please make sure your mute function is turned off to allow your signal to reach our equipment. Again, press star 1 to ask a question. And we'll pause for just a moment to allow everyone an opportunity to signal for questions. And we'll take our first question from Geronimo de Guzman with Morgan Stanley.
Hi, good morning. I had a question on the, or a couple questions on the cooperation framework with Coca-Cola Company. You mentioned that COF will get a preference in looking at certain assets from Bottling Investment Group, and I just was wondering if there was any specificity on what assets those would be, whether it's what Coca-Cola still has in the Western United States, the remaining assets in Uruguay and Guatemala, or if there's or the bottling assets in Southeast Asia. And then I also wanted to know if this could also possibly mean an acceleration in the potential to take over some of those assets in the Asian region, which in the past you've mentioned could take a little longer.
Good morning, Geronimo. Let me, without going into a lot of specificity on the M&A transactions, let me give you a little bit of background. We were into these negotiations of this cooperation framework with the Coca-Cola Company for a few months. since we just agreed on the insurance price increases in Mexico, this is also what we negotiated together with us. And you have, I think, a very clear picture of what are the VIP territories in the areas that we mentioned. We basically mentioned the U.S., and we mentioned Latin America and other regions. Latin America, you just mentioned, it's Guatemala and Uruguay are basically territories they own. In the U.S., you have a picture that is public of what territories are available. And I think that with respect to other regions, what I can say is that when we have been operating in the Philippines now for 4 years, I think that we are successfully transforming these operations. We have previously spread our interest in Southeast Asia and saying that we were going to the Philippines as a big share for us trying to expand in the future. We have this option to buy the remaining 49% that is owned by the Coca-Cola Company of the Philippines. That option expires in the 2020. And I think that once we prove to ourselves and to the Coca-Cola Company that we are a good operator for those markets, and once we exercise the option, that, as I mentioned, will start in 2020, I think that we will have possibilities to also look at other territories in Southeast Asia. I think that those are the three geographic areas that I envision as part of this agreement.
So just to clarify, the timing in Southeast Asia, though, hasn't changed as much in terms of that you would probably first look to consolidate or to buy the remaining portion of Philippines before looking at other assets, or do you think that this could help you move faster into the other territories?
No, I think that the timing has not changed. I think that, again, we will have to exercise our option on the other half of the Philippines that we don't own, and then we will potentially move to other territories. But I'll keep that in a medium-term basis. No?
Okay. And then just the second question that I had was on the marketing and commercial strategies that you mentioned you will develop with Coke. Again, just kind of wanted to know if there is any specifics that in terms of actions that could help mitigate the increase in concentrate prices, as you mentioned. And I guess more specifically, is there a commitment by Coca-Cola to funding a larger part of the marketing expenses in Mexico, as I believe had happened in 2006? And is there anything else in terms of productivity savings or anything like that is also helping mitigate the increase?
Yes, I think that with respect to the marketing investments and how or the agreement that we have with the Coca-Cola Company in terms of compensating this, I think that the most important element, and we have mentioned this in previous conferences, is that as opposed to that a few years back, now the Coca-Cola Company and Coca-Cola fans are both fully committed or fully of the idea that we should use better revenue management initiatives. And that basically means pricing. In the past, as I have expressed in other conferences, we were a little bit more focused on revenues and the Coca-Cola Company was a little bit more focused on volumes. And now I think that the two companies, we are pretty much in tune with the idea that we should take advantage of the strength that we have in the marketplace, both from the strength of the brand and also from the capillarity and the reach that we have in the day-to-day operations in the street as we reach thousands of outlets. So I think that the most important element for us to compensate part of this increasing in concentrate prices has to do with the pricing going forward in Mexico. The other part of the second half of this element to compensate these increases has to do with internal efficiencies that Coca-Cola Senza has been working on. And that has to do with what we call the centers of excellence that we started to describe to you probably two or three quarters ago. And just to give you an example, we have been launching what we call our digital commercial platform, which has been rolled out in the city of León and Puebla, and it has been started to be rolled out in Mexico City. With that, I think that it changes completely the way we are working with our sales personnel in the street. Before, they have to spend maybe an hour and a half up to 3 hours of their daily time in going to the distribution center, getting the instructions for the day, etc. And now we're this digital platform and devices similar to an iPhone, but it's a different device. They get the instructions and the strategies for the day directly into their handheld device, and they can accomplish much more. They can work much easily with the owner of the retail store in terms of showing the different promotions and picture of success for the cooler. So we have a much better targeted strategies per store. And that's that in some of the tests that we have done, especially in León and Puebla, that translated into increased revenues when we compare to the areas where we don't have the digital platform. Second, we have the Center of Excellence for Supply Chain, where we are basically trying to be more efficient in the changeovers in the production line, in planning for logistics, and also in the level of inventories, and we think that there will be some savings there as we also move into doing much better analytics as we centralize part of these functions that are dispersed in all the operations. So the idea is to have around 20% of the people that are fully dedicated to supply chain on a centralized basis as opposed to 100% decentralized as it is now. We will continue to have 80% of the fair count in the different countries, but all the reporting lines will be to be centralized to the headquarters, where we will have much better quality assurance and much better analytics that will help us reduce, as I mentioned, the inventories, transportation costs, and line utilization. So just to summarize, spending a long time is two areas. Pricing, where we feel very comfortable now with the Coca-Cola company that we are in the same line of thinking of being aggressive on the pricing front, and internal efficiencies, especially with the center of excellence.
Okay, just I don't want to take too much time, but just the last question, and to put it all together, do you think then that you can protect margins in Mexico going forward despite the concentrate price increase? Is it more about trying to maintain an absolute level of peso, kind of EBITDA levels?
Our idea is to try to maintain margins. Obviously, we will have to look at the raw material environment and the volatility that we are seeing in the currencies that has not helped particularly this quarter, especially in raw materials. For the total Coca-Cola FEMSA, we have an impact of around 800 million pesos negative impact just because effects on raw materials, including the effect of hedges and everything. So in excess of the hedges that we have that impact because especially the second quarter was very volatile, different from what we saw in the first quarter. So but taking all in consideration and knowing that there will be some volatility, there will be some pressure on sugar prices next year, that we'll have a better environment with PET prices next year, and we have this increase in the concentrate cost. The idea is to maintain the margin levels that we have in Mexico and being able to absorb that. Okay?
Great. Thank you.
And we'll take our next question from Andrea Teixeira with J.P. Morgan.
Hi, good morning there, and thanks for taking the question. I would like to talk more about like what you said, Hector, and thanks for the call. Obviously, the concentrate price increase is something that I see kind of like literally the glass half full, and I appreciate that you're pretty much giving us indication now. So I was curious to what my colleague also just asked, that, you know, the indication that you're doing this such a, in ahead of time is kind of like bundled together with the potential M&A. And I couldn't hear, your voice was kind of muffled, like when you were talking about like the order of preference. Obviously, Philippines, you have that co-option at some point. Should we think that this decision announced now, it's an indication that we're moving quite fast in both the Philippines and also the U.S., potential opportunities, and the fact that you also dropped Air Latam as something that you might be looking. Do you see, part of this question, do you see other bottlers also sitting now on the table with them, or this was more EU first? I just want to put something in perspective. And the second part of the question is, so to understand, the $35 million is compounded, obviously. I mean, the first year, should we assume $35 million and then going up to $70 and then going up to $105? That's how we should see it. And as you pass it on to price increases, this might be also offset by marketing spend, or this is like the net-net effect. Thank you.
Good morning, Andrea. Sorry about the sound. Let me see if it's a call that you can listen better now. I'm getting closer to the mic.
Thank you.
In terms of the order of preference, I think that the Coca-Cola Company has been very clear in their comments in the past that they would like to finish with all the refranchising of the U.S. by 2017. So my take on this is that since we basically signed this agreement with respect to the Indians, and that although it's not related, and it's related to the second question, the M&A activity is somewhat related to the Indians, so increasing the Coca-Cola Company, although they recognize the value of having us in all of these territories because of our capabilities. They didn't want to start those conversations until we close the negotiation on India. So we are just starting to look at this, but the order of preference will be given the time frame that has been set by the Coca-Cola Company in the past. I'll say that the U.S. by the second half of 2017 was a potential target time, and Latin America, since what is owned by BID is kind of small in Guatemala and Uruguay, I think that we can take that in 2016 or 2017 as soon as we can agree on this. Remember that in the case of Guatemala, we have also some... We have half of the operation that is under kind of complex labor relationship, so we have to be careful with that piece of the puzzle also, no, of fixing the labor issues in Guatemala. I think that this issue of having opportunities to acquire other territories has to do more with the fact that with the agreement in the NTS, you can argue that both companies are fully aligned for a long period of time, and therefore the Coca-Cola Company feels comfortable that we are the preferred partner for these territories. And we Coca-Cola Senza feel comfortable that we have a long-term agreement in place that will also help us fully analyze and understand what the relationship with the Coca-Cola companies in terms of economics and fully value investment opportunities, including in organic growth. So now that we are aligned, I think that the Coca-Cola Company and us are prepared to take advantage of our capabilities that we have demonstrated in the past, and therefore I think that's the main reason for this opportunity. I'm not sure what the agreement of the Coca-Cola Company is with other bottlers. I think that the other bottlers will have very similar agreements in terms of, or the same agreements in terms of the increasing price increases in Mexico. I don't know if there are opportunities for M&A acquisitions. The Coca-Cola Company publishes regularly what the BIG territories, where are they, and what's available or not. But my feeling is that every bottler in Mexico will have the same historically in Mexico, everyone has had the same incidence rate, and that's what my expectation was. But I think that's a question that should be answered by the Coca-Cola Company. I don't know exactly the specifics of the auditors. In terms of the $35 million, and you're right, it's 35 each year, so by the end of the third year, we'll have an impact close to $100 million. Remember that this, we are putting $35 million as a way of making it easier for everyone to understand, but the number is around 650 million pesos. That's translated at the present exchange rate is around that $35 million. Obviously,
right.
If you have an increase in revenues, that number might be changing. Or if you have a decrease in revenues, that number might get lower. But our estimate is around that number for the 3 years. It will start in July of 2017. So the full impact of next year is going to be half of that. So on a rolling basis, if you look at 12 months, it will have the impact of around $35 million. No? And it's one on top of the other. So after these three, that will be July. After July 19, you will be with the impact of around $105 million as an additional cost of raw material for Coca-Cola firms. But we think that we can compensate, as I was saying to Geronimo, with prices, because the Coca-Cola Company and ourselves are now more focused on profitability and revenues as opposed to just volumes, and some cost savings, as I was describing, with the central effectiveness.
Mm-hmm. And just to make sure that we understand that, so this is the net impact of any marketing help that they might give you on that. So that's in addition, that's definitely the net effect.
That's the total effect, we haven't discussed any specific support of marketing by the Coca-Cola Company. As it was done in the past, there was, remember, 10 years ago, there was a portion of the extra concentrate that they were receiving that they were dedicating to the marketplace. We don't have any specific agreement for that, although the Coca-Cola Company can very well, you know, decide to invest a little bit more in the market and in the marketplace. As you know that they have been just launching in Mexico the one brand strategy, which I think is very important, and there is quite an amount of investment behind that. But there is no specific agreement for part of those resources that the Coca-Cola Company will get for those to be reinvested in the market. So the total amount of the increase price increase, that's the effect of the $35 million per year, more or less. Okay?
Okay, thank you very much.
Thank you, Andrea.
And we'll take our next question from Luca Cipiccia with Goldman Sachs.
Thank you. Thanks for taking my question. I wanted to follow up on this discussion about the acquisition M&A and the partner, the agreement with Coca-Cola. Mostly, if you can, and you have answered partly to this already, but if you can qualify a bit better whether this new framework essentially puts you in a position to look at inorganic opportunities only within these territories, or this is in addition of other to other opportunities that may appear? And secondly, in LATAM specifically, given that the investment group only has Guatemala and Uruguay, so relatively small markets, does this also include bottlers where, say, Coca-Cola has an investment or has a participation as a stake? That could be the case in Brazil. There could be other opportunities. So that's the first part of the question, if you can qualify that. And then secondly, when it comes to the U.S. And the fact that you may potentially participate, arguably there's only one large territory left there. We saw ARCA getting Texas, but also establishing a partnership with a U.S. bottler with United. Is that form of agreement something that could also work for you? Arguably, there is in around California, Swire is very large. They also have territories in Asia. Is this all part of a sort of a thought process or an engagement that could be broader? If you can maybe clarify some of these points, it would be great, and I'll only ask this question.
Good morning, Luca. This agreement, this preferential process, this preferential treatment, has to do basically with the BID territory, so the public investment group territory, which is what the Coca-Cola company controls. But at the same time, there is a recognition, very clear, and it's expressed in our agreement, that we could define other alternatives, as we have done in the past, continue to evolve in Latin America or other regions by acquiring territories that do not have anything to do with BIG. So to be very clear, the agreement with the Coca-Cola company has to do with the territories that they control, and again, they recognize or they do not have any problem if we advance and we do rational transactions with other bottlers in the region. With respect to the U.S., we have expressed that we will look at these opportunities by ourselves and for us to decide 100% our decision if we would like to invite a potential partner or not on a venture on these territories. So that's totally under KOF's control and decision. So the idea is for us to understand these markets, see what specifics, what are the opportunities that are there, the requirements in terms of knowledge that will be needed in these territories, and for us to do adjustments if it's better to tackle that opportunity together with a partner or if we can do that 100% ourselves. Okay?
Perfect. Very clear. Thank you very much. I'll leave it to others for the other questions. Thank you.
Thank you.
And we'll take our next question from Lauren Torres with UBS.
Yes. Hi, good morning. As much as I'd like to ask about your results, I just have, I guess, one general question on this new framework. I guess putting together everything you've mentioned so far, Hector, you know, I understand the components of it, but I'm just curious why this was established now. It seems like, you know, you've had a good relationship or you have a good relationship with Coke. You've been in constant discussions with them with respect to expansion and the concentrate agreement. So, you know, why did this come out specifically now to be more specific and establish this framework? Once again, just a general question, but just trying to understand that better.
Last time we had a price increase was in a price in concentrate increase or increase in influence was 10 years ago, basically 2006.
we announced this at the starting 2007 we were going to have these increases. The agreement that we have at that time basically called for a 10-year period. And the 10-year period is coming up in July of next year, 2017. So, together with the Coca-Cola Company, our partners, we decided that it was better for both organizations to start discussing this ahead of time, because these are always difficult negotiations. In a way, you can argue that the Coca-Cola Company is taking some of the profitability away from the bottler partnership. You can argue, on the other hand, that the Coca-Cola Company has the right to do it. So we knew that the conversations were going to be tough, a few months ago, we decided that it was better to start that in advance and not wait until July of 2017 and to do that in a rush with a lot of pressure. It was important always in our mind, and I think that also in the Coca-Cola Company's mind, that it was better to take time so that we could evolve our conversations and look at the mutual benefits that this will bring. Again, we have always talked about this win-win situation, although it's difficult to envision that in a situation where one partner gets a little bit more money from the other. That's not necessarily a win-win. I think that these ideas of creating value together and discussing how can we improve the pricing of the revenue management initiatives in Mexico is what brings this opportunity so that it is converted into a win-win situation. So basically, Lorraine, I don't know if the question is why are you doing this a year in advance. It was basically because we didn't want to be with a lot of pressure, and we thought it was better, knowing that these conversations are difficult, to start with a lot of time ahead of time. I can say that these conversations have been very important, with a lot of pressure for both organizations for the last probably 7 months or 8 months. So it took a lot of time for us to devise this framework, but I think that at the end of the day we ended up with an agreement that is good for both organizations, because again it gives us certainty about the future and it takes away all the discussions that we're going to have because of July 2017. Okay?
Okay. So then is it okay to assume that starting, I guess, in 2019, once again, you'd have those discussions and an absolute amount would be determined for another 3-year period, or that's not the case?
I think that the company, both companies feel confident that after these 3 years, that it will get us to a level where both companies feel comfortable. And I think that it will be better to think of this as a long-term agreement that will give us certainty for KOF to, for example, decide on continuously investing heavily in the marketplace or doing a transaction, meaning in buying another bottle. Because obviously, when you buy another bottle, you need to factor in and give you projections of what the free cash flow generation would be, and the cost of concentrate is an important element. So I think that we should look at way more than 3 years in terms of the certainty that we are dealing with this agreement.
All right, okay. Very good. Thanks. Yep, thank you.
And we'll take our next question from Alex Robarts with Citi.
Hi, everybody. Thanks. Wanted to get back to the nuts and bolts here of the second quarter at COF. And one question is on Venezuela, and a second one on Brazil. Just, I mean, trying to understand and confirm the volume impact here of, I guess, the quarter's production disruptions. I mean, when we think about the, you know, the 40% decline in Venezuela volumes in the quarter, what percentage of production was impacted by production disruptions? And I guess it's safe to assume that this will probably be the softest quarter in Venezuela. In the past, you've been able to kind of get back margin with, you know, raising prices toward the very high inflation. As inflation gets and it seems to accelerate, do you think you will continue to have that ability to get pricing toward the inflation in the second half of the year? So that's the first question. And the second question is on Brazil, if I could just wait for that.
Okay, Alex, good morning. Venezuela, basically the situation in Venezuela, and I really want to, you know, send my really recognition and admiration to the team that we have there. It's very tough. We didn't have sugar. We had to close, basically stop production for a couple of weeks. We had some inventories. We ended up having the market without our products for a week, basically. But volumes were down 40% in the quarter because obviously it's not only sugar. Sometimes it's plastic caps. Sometimes it's electricity. So it's on and off. We have been going into the production restraints that we have in Venezuela. We have not had any problem in terms of passing inflation to the consumer. Very high price increases. Sometimes on a month we increase 40% versus the previous month. But you have to understand that inflation in Venezuela is done with some estimates as high as 300 or 400%. So prices have not been an issue in Venezuela. It's more the supply of raw materials to be able to produce and our beloved product. No? Given the fact that we know that and Venezuela produces sugar, but some of the sugar mills do not have the spare parts to continue producing or electricity. I mean, everyone is suffering a little bit with the same issues. So the idea that we have in Venezuela, and I think that will help us going forward, is that we are starting to launch products without calories. It's not necessarily the same formula that Coca-Cola Light, and it's not the same formula that Coca-Cola Fuel, but it's products that we are selling with the same red label saying original flavor, one that says no calories, and one that says light flavor. And these are different formulations that the Coca-Cola company has developed in the past, and that they are in agreement of using in this specific situation because of the lack of sugar in Venezuela, and basically for us to be able to place products in the stores, because we know that it's not only our product, but many other products are very scarce in Venezuela. Final comment in Venezuela, the previous year we produced around 240 million unit cases. Our budget calls for around 170, so we were already anticipating an important decline. This quarter was specifically tough because of the stoppage that we had in our production plants. My feeling is that third and fourth quarter will be more in the 170 million unit case kind of budget for the year. Okay? But certainly this second quarter was very tough.
Oh, thanks for that. I mean, I just wanted to understand what you just said on the pricing. We appreciate that you've been able to get very close to the, if not at, the inflation so far this year in Venezuela. did I hear you say that you have confidence that you can, with it kind of increasing and being higher here, inflation rate, that you can match that kind of higher expected inflation in the second half? Is that what you stated? Sorry, just to clarify that.
Yes, Andres, our idea is to price with inflation or the internal cost inflation that we have. We try to pass that to the consumer. Obviously, it's a very tough market, Andres, and you have to understand that there's a lot of scarcity, there's a lot of inflation, so nobody knows exactly what prices should be, but the important element is that you have the product in the store shelf. And consumer will pay whatever is needed to buy from that, and there is a lot of lack of control of with the retail system and the clients in terms of the pricing that they charge to the final consumer, because there's a lot of volatility going on. But from our perspective, our target is to continue passing inflation to the consumer, and I don't envision us being below inflation in the second half of the year. That's our target. Okay?
Okay, fair enough. Thanks for that. On Brazil, just it's a volume question. I mean, you know, thinking about, no secret, it's a tough consumer environment. And thinking about the 5% drop in the quarter with your beverage volume, it was interesting that the non-carbs, still beverages sell less, kind of 2 or 3%. And yet you also book an equity method loss from that joint venture with the stills and Coca-Cola in Brazil. And I guess I'm wondering, is the nature of losing money in Brazil with non-carbs and still the fact that you're related to, that you're just reinvesting in marketing? Is there something else beyond that? And do you think the business is still in non-carbs can make money net profit in the second half of the year? Thanks very much.
Yes, with respect to Brazil, in general, you have during the quarter mainly the drop in volume has mainly had to do with brand Coca-Cola. Remember, and I have said that in the past, that brand Coca-Cola has the largest market share of in terms versus Pepsi of the 10 countries where we operate. So the area that is suffering a little bit more has to do with brand Coca-Cola. Even with that drop that we saw in brand Coca-Cola, we are still gaining a little bit of share as we review the needs and information. So Brazil is the case where, given the macroeconomic environment and the consumer that is so much affected, we are winning market share in every category. With respect to the non-carbonated drinks, we are basically changing a little bit the focus of the joint venture. It's not that we are not making profit there, but the profits that we have in non-carbonated are already reflected in the numbers that we have in our operation. We are moving, because of some tax planning that was done many years ago, we are moving now into having Leao, which is the joint venture, more as a cost center that will have just a small margin and be a production center for the bottlers. And the profits or the margins of selling non-carbonated drinks are embedded in the numbers of each bottler. So at the end of the day, I think that in Brazil is a story where we hope to soon see the end of this recession, because the rest of the numbers are very promising. It's gaining market share in every category, improving a lot of the execution,
We are, as we discussed in the past, we were kind of in the lower quartiles in terms of the indexes that the Coca-Cola Company and the bottling system measures. Now we are basically in the top part of the top half of the bottlers in terms of execution. We have been able to pass price increases to the consumer. We have been able to improve in the margins of our operations, and we improve the EBITDA margin. I have to grant that it's not at the same level that we had a few years ago, but that has to do a lot with taxes that were implemented 2 or 3 years ago that reduced our margins. But we have been improving and recuperating part of that margin importantly. So the Achilles story, where the top line is missing basically because of the consumer environment that we find there. So as soon as we see a turnaround in the country, my expectation is that we will start to capture some of this improvement, again, in commercial execution, margins, market share that you'll see. We have the plan that we just opened a year and a half ago that is very important for us in terms of investment. It's working well in terms of the capacity and the capacity to serve returnables in that part of the country. So I think that, again, Alex, most of the indicators, that internal indicators that you see in Brazil are good. The issue is that volume is not there because of the consumer environment that is missing a little bit. No? Okay?
Very clear. Yep. Very clear. Thank you.
Thank you.
And we'll take our next question from Geronimo Contreras with GBM.
Hello, thanks for taking my question. Now, it's actually two questions. The first is related to the acquisition of Aves and the time frame you have in mind to conclude the deal. And the second is related to the Philippines operations. Just wanted to understand how the progress in that region, how far are you from reaching the desired levels of profitability? Thanks.
Good morning, Geronimo. With the other timing, we are basically in the process of all the antitrust approval in the different countries. Remember that Aves operates in many different countries. The transaction is, as you can expect, is subject to the successful completion of the antitrust authorization, basically from Mexico, Brazil, and Colombia. We expect to complete this by year-end, and then we have to work with Unilever with respect to some of the production plants, especially Brazil. It's in better, it's together with other areas of the production of Unilever, and therefore in areas like Brazil, we need to continue working together with Unilever for a few months or even a year before us having the full production capacity on our side. So I'll say that by year end, we should know about these antitrust processes. We have been working in together with the Coca-Cola Company in the business model going forward and the plan to start serving the market, assuming that everything will go okay with the antitrust authorities, but we have to wait first for that final process in terms of the final decision of the antitrust authorities, again, in Mexico, Colombia, and Brazil. With respect to the Philippines, we are very encouraged with the performance that we are seeing. And I'll say that after many quarters, that we have been investing in new presentations and in a new portfolio. We are seeing the fruit of these efforts, and we are seeing very important increase in brand Coke. For the quarter, we mentioned 18%, but for the first half of the year, brand Coke is increasing 21% versus last year. That is in replacement of some of the B brands that were owned by also by the Coca-Cola Company
and that we are losing representation in our mix. In terms of the profitability, we are again in a quarter that is in the positive side, still at levels that are very far from Mexico, which is a benchmark, I guess, but in levels around 7 or 8% EBIT margin, and low teens in terms of EBITDA margin, which is very encouraging given where we covered this franchise 3.5 years ago. So I think that we are moving in the right direction. We would like to see better results in the future, but I think that we are the right track. Thank you.
Very helpful. Perfect. Thanks.
And that does conclude today's question and answer session. I'd like to turn it back to our presenters for any additional or closing remarks.
Thank you for your interest in Coca-Cola FEMSA and the talk that you have in our company. And as always, myself and the team is available for any further questions. Thank you.
And that does conclude today's conference. Thank you for your participation. You may now disconnect.